Alright, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It's the Tornado Tony Pedicow.
And Psychic Tom Patrick.
And we got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. Lots of fights. Canelo Alvarez, big boxing news. He's going to be out for the rest of the year, but he did get the knockout win over Liam Smith. So, didn't pull a Joe Smith Jr. But did notice Joe Smith Jr. had a birthday recently. I think it's actually today. So, happy birthday, Joe Smith Jr.
Happy birthday, Joe Smith.
But anyway, there's still talk about, of course, Canelo versus Golovkin eventually, but it's obviously not going to be this year. And they're actually already talking about fall of next year for that one. So we'll see if that comes to fruition. But we got some interesting fights coming up, of course. We had UFC fights over the weekend, as well as Bellator fights. Unfortunately, I didn't get to interview Joe Warren, but he did have a big win over Sirwan Kakai in the co-main event there of Bellator 161. And interestingly enough, he had some comments about his situation there before the fight, because he had had some difficult fights, a loss, he's coming off a loss, lost the belt, and apparently, according to him, he had no sponsors going into this fight.
Wow. It's
hard to believe. You're the co-main event and you got no sponsors. I mean, I don't care if you're coming off a loss. And what's most interesting, I thought, was that he blamed the UFC and the Reebok deal for everybody going away from sponsorship. And it has a ripple effect, he said, with Bellator. I thought that was kind of interesting. But, he also said that, he relies on that kind of stuff to get by when he's got injuries and stuff like that to overcome. And, it was very tough for him to basically have to have fights and get wins to get sponsorship money.
Well, I think he looked pretty good. I think he also diversified his attack a little bit, worked on his Muay Thai knees. That really set everything up for him. So, nice to see him back.
Yeah, and apparently he broke the guy's nose
at some point
right before the stoppage. But just unbelievable. It was a submission, but it was really kind of like almost like a standing guillotine, I think it was. But he had, they called it a neck crank because he didn't have the arm in. But the guy was already busted up.
Yeah, I think he looked good on the ground. I mean, he was thinking a couple moves ahead. He would try something, and he knew he didn't have it. And I liked what I seen from him.
Right. And also, in part of this article, he says, I lost fights and sponsors dropped me right away. That's not the case in Olympic level or other sports. Things happen. For us to be in a sport like mixed martial arts, the most unpredictable sport in the world, it's kind of sad that's how they do that, but that's the game. That's how it is. Shit happens. You'll see me all sponsored up after I get these wins, and I'll laugh at them and just take their money because you never know what's going to happen.
Okay. Yeah, that's vintage.
And another story I read this week, I don't have the whole quotes and all that in front of me, but I read about Ally Quinta had a big contract dispute with the UFC over the lack of sponsorship money, and also coming off an injury and doing a lot of other shit now that he would have to sacrifice to be a fighter now. So, I mean, he's obviously made a name for himself with The Ultimate Fighter and a few fights in the UFC, but he's looking right now at his contract, and it's like $26,000 a fight, and they're asking him to come up and fight, and he's saying no. He's saying no to everything because, I mean, that is his right to refuse fights, but, he still has fights on his contract, but he's just, he's shaking his head at the contract saying, you got to do more for me because... Number one, all his antics outside the cage have made it so that he cannot get any post-fight bonuses, even if he does fight, which I think is a pretty ridiculous punishment. I mean, if you're going to suspend a guy from fighting, yeah, go ahead. But, I mean, to say when you do come back that you can't get a bonus? I mean, this, I don't get
okay,
that.
Okay, well, what provoked that? Refresh my memory.
He trashed his hotel room. He came out on live TV and cursed the fans.
I remember that, yeah.
And then there was one other incident. I don't exactly know.
Okay, so they said it's in his contract that he cannot get a fight of the night bonus or knockout of the night or any of that stuff.
It's not his contract, but it's like a punishment that the UFC put down on him.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's another one of his beefs, of course. Because, I mean, how are you really supposed to make sure you make enough money if you can't even get a bonus? But, you know, the fact that guys would not fight just because they can't get bonuses, too. I mean, that just kind of tells you how low they're getting paid. And, you know, as much as there's talk about a fighter's union and everything like that, it doesn't seem like even the threat of that is doing anything to really shift anything majorly in the UFC, especially. You know, you think the new ownership group comes in and, you know, they're connected to Hollywood agents, so maybe that they would structure different deals better, but from what I see on the outside looking in, it's like they're maybe getting more Hollywood opportunities for some of these fighters, but they're not really up in the bottom line any. And that might be because a lot of the same people are in place, because they didn't really change the woodwork there. They didn't really get too deep into aligning it the way they wanted it. They just left just about everybody in there who's been in there, including Dana White, so I don't know if that's a factor of it or just it's getting to that point, though, where, you know, fighters are not afraid to speak up as much as they used to be. And it's always kind of been trending that way. But now that you don't have a family like the Fertittas overseeing everything, the guys are definitely not scared. And now they're not scared to just say, I'm sitting out. And it's an interesting tactic. I mean, look at the NFL. They had a lockout. NHL's had a lockout. Baseball had a lockout there for a little while. So maybe that tactic might work if enough guys do the same thing. But Al is a pretty loose cannon, so I doubt a lot of people are going to be following him. Another interesting development in MMA. A couple promotions have merged now. Resurrection Fighting Alliance and Legacy Fighting Championship. And RFA, Resurrection Fighting Alliance, is mostly known as RFA, is actually owned by Ed Soares, who is a big-time manager. He manages Anderson Silva, a bunch of other Brazilian fighters. And actually, Ken Pavia, when he was being sued by the UFC, talked to me a lot about how Ed Soares' involvement with the UFC and fighters and management is one of those relationships where he has a complete monopoly and nobody challenges it, especially on the Brazilian fighters, because he just manages just about every one of them. And Ken claims that he got that in with a lot of them just because he speaks Portuguese. And, you know, he was at the right place at the right time to get a couple good signees. And next thing you know, he's got Anderson Silva. He's got his own fight league. And UFC loves him. So it's not surprising that RFA is a big feeder league for the UFC. And now it's going to be an even bigger one because they picked up Legacy Fighting Championship. They basically pushed the owner of that right out of the picture. He's having nothing to do with it. So it's going to be basically all of Ed Soares and his people, all his people, running the show. So they're going to call it, they're trying to create what they call the NCAA of mixed martial arts. So we'll see how that works out. But you're going to probably see a lot more fighters coming from that conglomerate there. But they're never going to try to upstage the UFC because they're in so tight with them. But yeah, here's the article about Iaquinta. He was supposed to face Thiago Alves at UFC 205. And, you know, he's from New York, too, so this was going to be Madison Square Garden, the works. But he actually verbally accepted the match and then just thought about it, and said nope. After he looked at the bout agreement, he decided he's not going to compete for that money. And he's been on the shelf for 17 months with a knee injury. So, said he really wanted to fight in New York, but I can't take a pay cut for this fight. Basically.
Well, you know, more power to him. Maybe this will work.
And he also said he wiped out his savings account to stay afloat in fear of another injury potentially ending his career is really the, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back with him. The other incident was missing a fighter summit. So they wanted him to fly out to Vegas for free. You know, they're not paying for it. He's got to do it on his own dime to go to a fighter summit. He's already struggling because of his injury. And it's just another bullshit thing that they do. I don't understand how they can legally do that. You know, you have to be at this summit, but we're not going to pay for you to be there. That's some bullshit. For a company worth that much. He says, you know, the UFC wanted me to fly out there to Vegas. All right, where is that part? All right, 5 weeks out from my fight with Bobby Green. The UFC wanted me to fly out to a fighter summit in Las Vegas, which would have been a time difference for a week, and it would have been 5 weeks out from a fight. I teach private lessons, he says. That's how I make money on the side. I would have had to stop doing that. I would have had to go to Las Vegas, get mediocre training away from my own team and away from my coaches, and not get paid a thing. And that's another concern. I mean, obviously, Conor McGregor raised that issue about being called away from training for PR. But, I mean, here's something that's not even, you know, really a press deal. It's behind closed doors, you know. So it's not like he's not selling the fight if he doesn't go to this fighter summit. So that's kind of bullshit. But he said it would have been an expense for me to go out there, and I was sick as well, so... And then the UFC did apparently allow him to bow out of the Fighter Summit, but then he posted photos of himself on a beach near his house a couple days later, and they called him and asked him why he was playing in the sand when he was too sick to attend a meeting in Las Vegas. So skipping the Fighter Summit was the third strike. Crazy. But he had some big-time surgery. And he had to struggle, too, to get him to pay for the surgery, which he did obviously sustain during competition. You know, he was initially injured during the Ultimate Fighter, but he kept fighting with it and fighting with it, and finally he addressed it. So,
you know, the whole thing about not paying his plane ticket, I mean, it's hard to wrap your mind around that. Is the UFC that broke?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, somebody's got to have a corporate jet he could borrow.
Yeah.
Or charter something. I mean, actually, I just read an article today about how cheap chartered flights are becoming. Up here we have an airport, a small airport, and the number of jets flying in has just skyrocketed. Just crazy numbers because so many people are chartering jets, and it's very cheap now because of low fuel prices. So, I mean, they definitely can afford it now. They should be doing it more. And we'll have to keep an eye on that situation, though. See if anybody else has that idea to do the same thing. So, back to boxing. In his 50th fight the other day, Saul Alvarez... got his 34th knockout of his career over Liam Smith. He picked up the WBO World Super Welterweight title. And, of course, BoxRec's still disappointing me to say. It doesn't even tell you what round the knockout was anymore. Even when you go to the fighter's complete record. That's some bullshit.
I didn't go to the fight, but I did watch highlights of it. And... to be honest, I've seen more competitive heavy bag question.
Yeah. I believe it. And I mean, it was kind of a hand-picked opportunity.
Beat him up.
Even though the guy was undefeated, it seemed to me like a hand-picked opportunity for him to shine. But he did bust his thumb in the process. They're saying it's a hand fracture, but it's kind of like the webbing, I think, between the thumb and the index finger area of the thumb. So it's more of a thumb issue, which obviously didn't affect his knockout power. But it's going to sideline him for a while because it's going to hurt to punch.
Boy, he was fired up in his interview afterwards. He says he's not afraid of no one, and he wants Triple G.
I ain't afraid of nobody, not even the doctor. I'm going to get my surgery. I'm back. We also had Czech Congo facing Tony Johnson in the main event over last Friday of Bellator 161, I believe it was, or is it 181? I don't know. Yeah, 161. We're up that far. Congo versus Johnson. And Tony was all right at the beginning, but, you know, it just seemed like the endurance factor wasn't there for him, and he just got very frustrated by Czech's main strength, which I talked about last week, is mostly just kind of clinging on to you and keeping you from doing anything major. It just doesn't seem like he has that stoppage skill.
And Kondo's got his ground game where he's able to use my favorite phrase, so wrestle fuck. And it was so frustrating with Tony trying to get up and just couldn't do it.
Yeah, and so frustrating, even the judges didn't give it to Congo. I think one of them had it a tie.
Yeah. And I think the other two had Congo winning.
So that was an interesting bout there. As I mentioned, Joe Warren got the win in the co-main event. And if I can get Show Dog to cooperate, I'll tell you who else fought who else. We also had a UFC, big UFC fight over the weekend as well, on Saturday. Poirier versus Johnson. All right, so in the Coco main event, if you want to call it that, we had a split decision win for Anastasia Yankova over Veta Arteaga. And Derek Campos beat Jamil Chan by decision. Come on, Sure Dog. You can do it. Alright. Derek Campos beat Jamil Chan. As I mentioned, that was a unanimous decision. Nick Gonzalez beat Warren Stewart by split decision. And we had Daniel Pineda beat Mark Dickman by rear naked choke submission in the third round, 207 into that one. And then we had Armando Villarreal beat Tommy Burghardt by rear naked choke submission in the very first round, 208 into that one. Sean Clements beat David Ramirez by unanimous decision. Garrett Scott beat Waylon Braunstrup by rear naked choke again. Very popular submissions on this card. 50 seconds into the fight, that's pretty good. Matt Mazurek beat Jose Guerra by split decision. And Ray Trujillo beat James King by arm triangle choke. And we got a big event coming up this weekend as well. UFC Fight Night 95. We got 94 and 95. Back-to-back weekends here. And the UFC Fight Night, the main event, Michael Johnson versus Dustin Poirier. And Michael didn't waste many seconds here. It's just a little bit longer than Tyson took to knock out Spinks.
I hate to use that phrase, I just got caught. You know, you hear fighters say that. But that's what it looked like. I mean, Dustin was a little slow early on, but it just seemed like had he got past the first round, I mean, the fight was his to lose. But what is that saying? You just got caught, and I think Johnson was desperate. I mean, he knew he had to come up with the win. And, you know, congratulations to him. He said before, his back was against the wall.
Yes, sirree. And Dustin falls to 20-5. Johnson moves up to 17-10 with the big win. Also, Derek Brunson versus Uriah Hall ended in a pretty quick knockout TKO from a punch. Round one, it took him just 6 more seconds in that one, 1 minute and 41 seconds, to take Uriah out of the picture. And Uriah just looked like he was outclassed in this one, just didn't seem to be able to put it all together.
Well, yeah, you know, you might be able to question the stoppage, but it still comes down to you don't want to put the referee in a situation where he's even able to have a quick stoppage.
Right. And then we had a few decisions in a row. We had Evan Dunham beating Rick Glenn by unanimous decision. Roan Carnero beat Kenny Robinson by split decision. Islam Makhachev beat Chris Wade by unanimous decision. And then we had a technical submission anaconda choke from Chaz Skelly over Maximo Blanco, the seventh fight of the night. My computer wants to be wicked slow tonight. I'll tell you in a minute who the rest of the fighters were. But Michael Johnson looked pretty good, though, in the main event, I will say. Definitely he's got some new...
There's a lot of bad blood between those two gyms. A little bit of unsportsmanlike stuff at the end of it. Johnson did apologize. Did you see it, Rick?
I did not see the fight itself or the apology, but I did read that he was emotional during his apology, supposedly. So.
Yeah, a little bit of taunting and you know, a few middle fingers and stuff. And so I don't know if it was between the two of them there was something, or if it was the gyms, because you know the Black Zillions and ATT really have some bad blood.
Yeah. Yeah, they did a whole show on it.
Yeah.
The Ultimate Fighter did the team versus team show.
Speaking of the Ultimate Fighter, I actually broke down and watched last night. Hadn't seen it in quite a while. It looks like they changed the house. Looks like they've made a few changes. And they also changed the theme song.
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
But I haven't watched it in weeks now. Sheesh, I've been slacking off. I haven't watched a lot of fights either. I watched, like, maybe 2 fights on this Fight Night 94 card. That was it. Anyway, in the first fight of the night, while we're waiting at the page up, we had Albert Morales and Alejandro Perez fighting to a majority draw. And we had Randy Brown beating Eric Montano by guillotine choke submission. That was in the third round, 18 seconds into that one. Jose Albert Quinones beat Joey Gomez by unanimous decision. The fourth fight of the night, Antonio Carlos Jr. got the win, naked choke, with 14 seconds left in the fight over Leonardo Guimarães. And then Bilal Muhammad got a win over Augusto Montano, and that was in the third round, 4:19 into the third round by TKO from punches. Sixth fight of the night, we had Gabriel Benitez beat Sam Cecilia, this is the one I saw, by guillotine choke submission. And that was a brawl up until that point. But Benitez finished it up with the submission, 120 in the second round. And now we got to talk about some more boxing schedule coming up. We'll go to Box Rec. We'll deal with their bullshit instead of Sure Dogs.
Oh, God.
Tonight, we got some stuff going on in Japan.
Tony, have you been online to get the latest Spring Magazine?
What was that? Because I was by subscription. I haven't gotten one in about 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were you getting the online version as well?
No, just the hard copy.
Oh, okay. Because I think you can get them both. I don't think the online one is that. I mean, I usually wait for the hard copy, but I cheated online here, you know, went on a bit. And, you know, about the Kovalev word fight, Rosenthal, I can't think of his first name, one of the Ring Magazine writers, he feels it's going to be a letdown. He doesn't think that Kovalev's, he doesn't think that Kovalev's going to land a glove on Ward.
And, you know what? It's funny you say that. I have a guy that I see at the gym all the time, and we actually become pretty friendly. In fact, he met me down in Philadelphia last year at the Joe Frazier statue dedication. And he is, you know, well-versed in boxing, somebody you can have very intelligent conversations with. His favorite fighter is Sergey Kovalev. He's of, you know, Ukrainian descent. So, he's a big Triple G fan. He's a Kovalev fan. He's met Kovalev. They've become friends. They talk sometimes. And he was talking to me the other day when we were finishing our workout. And he goes, I'm going to be honest with you. He goes, style-wise, he goes, I do not like this matchup for Kovalev at all. He goes, I don't like it. He goes, and I hate to say it, but I got to go Ward by decision.
Well, on the downside for Ward, remember, he is moving up in weight. And if you look at the last couple of years, the quality of opposition and the inactivity, I mean, you can make a case either way. And right now, on some betting lines have Ward as a slight favorite. But then I've seen other betting lines, it's minus 110 pick 'em, no matter what. So.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one. I mean, you got to love Kovalev's chance to knock him out if he does connect. But
it's... Oh, of course. I mean, Kovalev can knock anybody out. And it's going to come down to this. When you look at the questions going into the fight, as you go back to any time I would write one of my preview prediction articles, I would always have a section on there, what are the questions? And in this one, here's what I would already say. One, can Ward handle Kovalev's power if he gets caught clean? That's one question. Will any of the activity, you know, hinder him? Will that just have him just a step slower? You know, will his reflexes just be just a minuscule slower, which could be a severe detraction?
Right.
So there are two of them. And then it's like, and the third one I would say was, what happens if he can't keep Kovalev off of him? Like, if he can't get Kovalev's respect? And so those would be my three questions there. Then my questions for Kovalev would be, can he, you know, and I'll say, can he hinder Ward's confidence early? Because that's what he's going to have to do. You're talking about, Ward is a guy that hasn't lost since he was a 13-year-old kid in the amateurs. So he's a guy that's used to winning. He's used to dominating. So if he gets hit a few times, he gets hurt, maybe gets knocked down, how is he going to react to that? You know, is he going to be in uncharted territory? So
right. Can you think about this, honey. On the other hand, if Ward gets into a rhythm, it's a long night for Kovalev. And that's, I agree with you totally. Those first couple rounds are going to be so important.
Yeah, but you're right, because if Ward gets in a rhythm and he gets through those first three, four rounds and he's kind of making Kovalev look like a Hopkins-Trinidad type fight, it's going to get continuing and up from there.
Yeah, I actually I like Ward over Kovalev too, but I mean, the other thing that makes me think a lot about this fight and Kovalev's chances is that you also have to remember that Ward hasn't really faced, like, big contenders in the last few years. I mean, probably the toughest guy he faced was the guy we interviewed, Edwin Rodriguez. And Edwin was taking a big step up in that fight.
Well, I was, and you might say, okay, maybe over the last few years, but you got to remember, just a few years ago, he basically swept the Super Six,
right? Kessler.
But again, it's a different weight.
Yeah.
You know, here he's bumping up to light heavyweight, and he hasn't fought anybody that really, but, I didn't even know.
But you got to remember something. You think guys like Frotch. Frotch was a big super middleweight.
All right.
Yeah, he was a guy that you could see as a light heavyweight.
What do you think the odds will be? Are they set yet?
I just mentioned it. It could be Ward is a slight favorite on some pages, but a couple of them have it -110 pick 'em. So.
All right, Psychic Tom. When you get your vibe and know who's going to win.
Oh, man. See, this is going to be like that Hopkins-Kovalev thing. I kept going back and forth and back and forth. So
will Hopkins fight again? I reserved
the right to remain silent until the show before.
Yeah, you got any updates about Hopkins, Tony? You mean a Philadelphia guy?
No, I haven't. I know a few times he's come out and said that he's got something big in the works, but... I haven't heard anything. He hasn't fought in 2 years.
No, he hasn't.
He said he wants to have one big going away fight, maybe in Philadelphia, but nothing's been mentioned.
He hasn't called you to tell you? Come on.
He hasn't. No.
What the fuck? Maybe I thought you guys were buds.
No, I'm just kidding.
We got a lot of boxing this weekend to talk about. It's a pretty interesting one, actually, in the Dominican. If I can find it again here. All right. Tomorrow night, I believe, in the Dominican Republic. Here it is. In Santo Domingo. Main event is no title on the line, but super featherweights Javier Fortuna, 29-1-1, fighting Marlon Cabrera, who is undefeated, 22-0-0. And super middleweight, super welterweights in the co-main event, both undefeated. Jason Rosario, spelled J-E-I-S-O-N. That's a first. I don't think I've ever seen that one. Fighting Carlos Jairo Cruz. Rosario is 11-0. Cruz is 17-0. And F-U Boxrec for not having their knockouts.
Yeah.
But anyway, then we go all the way to Russia for a couple interesting ones for weird long-named titles. Fedor Papazov is in the main event. He is 17-2 at lightweight, fighting Sergio Mauricio Gil. 19-7-2 is his record, and this one is for the vacant International Boxing Organization Intercontinental Lightweight title. So it's an international and an intercontinental title at the same time. But that's weird. Co-main event, Aslanbek Kozayev. He's 29-2-1, fighting Paul Kamenga, who is 19-0 at welterweight. That one is for the vacant International Boxing Organization International Welterweight title. Two internationals. Then we got cruiserweights. Pretty decent records. Ruslan Fafer, he is undefeated, 16-0 at cruiserweight, fighting Andre Niazev, who is 13-3. That's about it for the good ones on that card. And over in the United Kingdom, we got a pretty interesting one. Simon Barclay, this is probably the mismatch of the week. He is 8-1. Not too much of a mismatch, but definitely a mismatch. He's fighting Florian Strupitz, who is 3-36-3. 36 losses going into that one. And I believe that, I don't know if this is a showbox card, but I do know we have some stuff on this on our blog. There's a big fight going on in Miami, Oklahoma at the Buffalo Run Casino. One of Tommy Morrison's sons will be on this card. James McKenzie Morrison, 9-0-1 at heavyweight, fighting Aaron Chavers, who is 7-1. But the main event is...
What is Aaron's last name?
Chavers.
Chavers?
No. C-H-A-V-E-R-S. Chavers. I don't know. Probably pronouncing it.
Oh, okay. Because I was wondering if it would be Ernie's son.
That would be funny, huh?
That'd be interesting. A couple big pitchers, you know, a couple big punchers there.
Yeah. And then the other brother, Trey Lippe Morrison, he is 11-0 at heavyweight, fighting Ed Lattimore, who is 13-0. So somebody's always got to go there.
The Morrison guys would be a couple good guests if we could ever get them.
Yeah.
That would be pretty cool.
I don't think it would be too hard to find them. But, yeah, we'll see about that for sure. I mean, I get the press releases for their fights all the time, so I'm sure I can put two and two together. It's about time I got a guest, huh? I'm slacking. I feel like it's been like 3 months. in the main fight card portion, we have Ivan Galoob, who is 12-0 at welterweight, undefeated also, fighting James Stevenson, who is 23-2. And the one title on the line in this card is in the co-main event, a couple undefeated guys. Jimin Wang, he is undefeated at 7-0 at super lightweight. And Ivan Baranchik is 11-0. This one's for the vacant USBA super lightweight title. And then light heavyweights in the main event. Radovoj Kladjstik, who is 21-1, fighting Travis Peterkin, 16-0-1 in the main event.
Pretty good pronunciation there, Rich.
Yeah?
Wow.
Hey, I've been practicing.
Yes, sir. That sounded professional.
Yeah, I guess with all the freaking names I've had to pronounce on this show, I probably should do ring announcing.
Hey, I think you've always been good at it.
Then we go to Florida. We got Kissimmee, Florida. It's got some fights going on. They're pretty interesting. And a former guest of ours is the co-main event at featherweight. Still undefeated, Tokakon Clary, 19-0 at featherweight, fighting John Jimeno, who is 14-7. Pretty interesting featherweight bout. And then super featherweights in the main event, Christopher Diaz, 17-0, and Raul Harales, who is 22-5-1. And if I remember correctly, he was a Peter Manfredo guy. Not sure if he still is. He's in Florida now, so probably not. But it was a pretty good interview. He was a smart kid. All right. Yeah, we got a sort of an interesting one over in France. Like Frenchies, we got Zachary Atu, 22-6-2, fighting Emmanuel De La Rosa, 36-2-1. Neither of those guys sound like they have French names. But that's super welterweight. It's for the European Union super welterweight title. And we go to page two. What's on page two? Japanese lightweight titles on the line in Japan, of all places. Tokyo.
I don't believe it.
Nihito Arakawa. He's 27-6-1 at lightweight. And he's fighting Yusuke Tsukada, who is 8-5. Kind of a lot of experience versus almost none. Then we got the vacant Japanese featherweight title on another card. Shota Hayashi, 27-5, with one draw, fighting Noriyuko Ueno, who is 18-13-5. That's in Aichi, Japan. On Saturday. Usually the Japanese ones are on Sunday. It's kind of weird seeing that. And then we've got Kazakhstan. It's got some action over the weekend. Talk about hard to pronounce names. I'm definitely going to butcher some of these. Issa Akerbayev, 17-0 at cruiserweight, fighting Mike Kurzweil, who's 17-6 for the Global Boxing Council cruiserweight title. And we got Alexander Zuravsky, who is 12-2, fighting Georgi Jinchurids, who is 11-4. That's for the vacant WBO Oriental welterweight title, because you know both of those guys are Oriental.
Yeah.
And then we got guys 4-0 fighting guys 22-14-1 for the vacant WBC Youth Intercontinental Middleweight title. I would think the guy who's 22-14-1 is not really a youth. If he's been fighting that long, that many fights. It's a fight. Then we got Medzid Bektemirov. He is 17-1-0 at light heavyweight, fighting Gary Abadjian, who is 33-27-1. That's a heck of a record. And we go down to Mexico for the WBC International Silver Super Featherweight title. Being fought between Johnny Gonzalez, 61-10 is his record at Super Featherweight. Fighting Hirotsugu Yamamoto, 19-12-2. I'm betting on Johnny. And co-main event there is Ivan Cano, who is 23-7-2, fighting Diego Cruz, 16-3, with one draw. That's no title there. Light flyweights, Lourdes Juarez, 17-2, fighting Yesenia Gomez, who is 13-4, also on this card. And we got lightweights, Francisco Rojo, 17-2, fighting Eduardo Escobedo, who's 34-4. That's about the best on that card. And we go all the way down to Australia. There's a couple fights. This is a pretty crazy matchup. There's not really any good fights on this card, but main event is Craig Thompson. He's 5-0 at cruiserweight, fighting Peter Tovio, who is 223-1. Do you think he's an opponent or what?
223-1.
8-3-1-2. Yeah. What was the guy's record you fought? I don't even want to tell you. Then we have some Polish fights going on. Well, at least the main event is worth mentioning. Here's another disparaging, weird setup here. We've got a guy who's 6-0, Adam Balski, a cruiserweight, fighting Valerie Brudoff, who's 43-9. A lot of experience. And co-main events, not really all that great, but Robert Parzekzuski, who is 13-1, fighting Bika Adouashvili, who is 18-5. That's over in Kalisz, Poland. Still on Saturday. Looks like some titles also going on in another Poland card. Oh no, this is Slovenia. There's another one. 23-25 against 5-0. Malik Zanad is 5-0 light heavyweight, fighting Attila Pelko, 23-25, for the vacant World Boxing Federation International Light Heavyweight title. It's going to be crazy to have a guy with a title who's 23-25. Or, well, he'd be 24-25. He doesn't even have a winning record. He's got a title. Gene Moretti is in the co-main event. He's 12-9-4 at super lightweight, fighting Mikhail Avakian, who is 36-26-4. That's for two titles, the World Boxing Federation International Super Lightweight title and the vacant Universal Boxing Organization Intercontinental Super Lightweight title. Jesus. You're going to have a tough time etching that on the belt. UBO, I never heard of that. Universal Boxing Organization. That's a new one.
I think I have that.
And one of the biggest fights over the weekend, of course, is Anthony Crolla taking on Jorge Linares over in the UK. And Crolla, of course, big UK fighter. He is 31-4-3 at lightweight. This one's for the WBA World Lightweight title. Jorge comes in at 40 wins, 3 losses. And none of those losses recent, so this should be a real decent fight. Corolla has had a couple losses in his last, I mean, a couple draws in his last couple fight, last five fights. But, yeah, definitely should be an interesting matchup there. And then the co-main event is for the WBA International Middleweight title. Not the International Continental, or Intercontinental. That one is between John Ryder, 23-2, and Jack Arnfield, who has 20 wins and 2 losses. Another interesting bout on the card. Fernando Castaneda, 24-10 at light heavyweight, fighting Hosea Burton, who's 17-0. And it's got to be one of the weirdest names I've seen in the history of doing this one. Doing this broadcast, but we got Callum Johnson. That's not the weird name. He's 15-0 at light heavyweight, fighting for the vacant Commonwealth British Empire light heavyweight title against Wilberforce Shehipo, who is 23-8. Wilberforce, Wilberforce. That's his first name. It's weird. Weird. That's pretty much it for all the big fights. Box Rick. But we do have to mention UFC Fight Night 95 now. Almost up to the 100. We got Christian Justino. Still calling her Cyborg, I guess. She is 16-1. Fighting Lena Landsberg, who's 6-1.
Yeah, Chris had to lose a lot of weight. I guess she was in the 160s just about a week ago.
Yeah, I did read something about her doctor recommends she start taking birth control for weight loss.
I don't know why, because supposedly that helps you retain water.
Yeah, I don't know what that was all about.
You know, she didn't even want to say. On the show last night, she didn't even want to say how she just smiled when they asked about the weight cut. She says, "I'll be there," but you can tell it's been hard.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, they ought to make it so that she doesn't have to do that. She's a big enough star; they should be able to find somebody around her weight. But
yeah,
it is what it is. Or just make her fight men. No.
That's so interesting because I know no athletic commission would ever allow it, but it's so ingrained in men from the time we're little boys. You don't hit girls. That's off limits. Just don't do it. But I'll tell you what, if you're climbing into a ring or a cage with a Cyborg, you want to go in and just slap fight and touch butt, you better use man strength on her.
Yeah. Wow. First of all, I think it's debatable whether she's really all man. I mean, all woman. No, I shouldn't say that, but you know, she is obviously wrapped up in a lot of steroid controversy. So, you know, I don't know if she has a mustache or anything that she shaves off. But sometimes that stuff really messes with your whole equilibrium, female male hormones. So.
Yeah, the endocrine system's very, very precisely balanced. You got to be careful.
So anyway, she could be just as tough as a man. I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. But anyway, co-main event, Heenan Barao, back in action. He is 33-4, fighting Philippe Nover, who is 11-6-1. And I'm surprised these guys haven't fought before. Roy Nelson and Antonio Silva. Well, that is a fight. I'm going to bet on Roy because Antonio never impressed me very much. And he's always kind of been more intimidating looking than he actually is in a lot of fights to me.
My question is, how much does Bigfoot have left?
Yeah.
That's the whole issue. So I've got to go with Roy in that one. And in the fight before, I think Barao has to shine. This is almost a must-win for him. So I'll go with Barao in that one, too. But, you know, it's funny with Bigfoot because apparently him and Nelson have a friendship.
Yeah.
And supposedly after the fight, they're going to go out to a Brazilian barbecue place. Mm-hmm. I don't know who's buying. You know, I guess the winner's going to have to buy, but kind of interesting with those two. And they, and Bigfoot was saying that they've trained together, and he said he wishes that he could have had another opponent, but they got to be professional and go at it.
Yeah. Well, I would know what that dynamic was like if Tony and I ever fought, but I never really trained with Tony either. It would be different. Was like that. I mean, think about how many times these guys on the Ultimate Fighter had to fight their own teammates.
Yeah.
And sometimes, well, I don't know if anybody's ever had to fight a friend on there.
Well, yeah, that's just it too, though, because you remember that whole idea of teammate. I mean, you're just thrown together by the luck of the draw.
Yeah.
So it's not like the guys you train with in your home gym.
It's like Rocky and Apollo Creed.
That's right.
Anyway. We also have Francisco Trinaldo taking on Paul Felder. Trinaldo comes in at 20-4. Felder is 12-2. We got Thiago Santos in action. He is 13-4, fighting Eric Spicely, who's 8-1. Godofredo Castro, 12-4, fighting Mike De La Torre, who is 14-5. Way down on the card, number 7 fight. Guys with some really great records. Gilbert Burns, who's 11-1, fighting Michael Prezeres, who is has 20 wins and just 2 losses. Why that's so far down on the card. We got Michinori Tanaka in the 6th fight of the night. 11-1, fighting Ronnie Yaya, who is 22-8. When they asked Ronnie if he wanted to fight, he said, yeah, yeah. But,
unintended.
The 5th by the night, we got Jussier Da Silva, who is 18-4, versus Dustin Ortiz, who is 15-5. 4th by the night, Eric Silva, who's usually on the main card, 18-7, coming in against Luan Chagas, who is 14-1-1. And the guy with the most names on the card, Alan Patrick Silva Alves, 13-1 in the 3rd fight of the night, fighting Stephen Ray, who's 19-5. And we got 2nd fight of the night is Vicente Luque, 9-5-1, and Hector Urbina, 17-9-1. First fight of the night, Gregor Gillespie, 7-0, fighting Glaco Franca, who is 13-4. And as much as I hate BoxRec for not putting knockouts in, SureDog not only does not include knockouts or submissions in their main card postings, but they don't even tell you what TV station it's going to be on. They don't tell you what the weights are. Nothing. Just the records and the names. A lot of guys are lucky they got pictures on there, too. Some of these guys, they're on a main event. They don't even have a picture. Anyway, I think that's about it for us. There is one other piece of news I wanted to mention. Good old Don King is back in the news again for using some creative language to endorse Donald Trump. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
I heard it.
He dropped a little N-word, and everybody's making a lot of hay about it, but, I mean, his idea of the whole speech was saying that, you know, it used to be you couldn't be a successful person if you were black. You were always a successful Negro, you know? So he was kind of making that point, and then he just dropped the N-word. And actually, a lot of people laughed. They thought it was a joke part of it, but he was like, whoops. He looks like he's getting old. You know, I did get a press release today saying he had signed somebody
else. I saw the picture. He did.
Looks like he's slowing down a little bit. But anyway, he's in Donald Trump's corner. So you know what that means. Donald Trump will be bankrupt by the end of the year. No. we'll see.
It's a very, very good point. Never underestimate Mr. King when it comes to that.
Well, they're a big fan of other people's money. That's for sure. Donald was talking about that the other day. How you build things with other people's money. Anyway, that's it for me. If you guys got anything else, now's the time.
Nah, man, that's it for me.
All right, guys, till next week.
All right, enjoy the fight next weekend, guys.
Yes, sir.